This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
Podcast of Audio Reading Service volunteers reading the Journal Gazette is provided by the Allen County Public Library for the sight and print impaired and made available with the permission and cooperation of the Journal Gazette.
We're back from our break. We're reading the Living section from the Wednesday, April 24th Journal Gazette. And here's Sarah with the horoscopes.
Aries, March 21st to April 19th. Don't overthink it. Finding fun is really quite simple. Bring back the enjoyment by remembering the last thing that gave it to you. Seed whatever that was with more attention, investment, and playfulness. Taurus, April 20th to May 20th. You're unique, and your approach to life cannot be replicated. It doesn't mean you have to take on the biggest goals and most remarkable endeavors. Think small things, big heart. Life will be sweeter, taken one bite at a time. Gemini, May 21st to June 21st. Your very presence seems to awaken the emotional intelligence in others. They'll show you their brightest insights and moods, and yours improves with every interaction. Cancer, June 22nd to July 22nd. Your self-talk is a habit of mind that influences your behavior, mood, and energy levels more than you might realize. Today, you make it fun inside the playground that is your mind, and you even have private jokes between you and you. Leo, July 23rd to August 22nd. Hyperbole can hurt or help things. Nothing always happens or never happens, and these might be unhelpful phrases. But it's very nice to know that someone loves you to the moon and back, or that you're the absolute best. Virgo, August 23rd to September 22nd. If you're not sure if an endeavor aligns with your values, it will be pretty evident by the way you feel. Does the job tire you? Does the relationship take more energy than you'd like? You embody your values effortlessly, paving the path for success. Libra, September 23rd to October 23rd. There's an influx of fresh excitement to energize your work. It may be slightly stressful, especially because you'll be working with people who have a different style from yours. But don't worry, with awareness, you'll learn from one another. Scorpio, October 24th to November 21st. Take on more than you think you can handle, because you'll grow into whatever you choose. Do make sure you like the way it looks on the model first, because that's how you'll wear it too. Sagittarius, November 22nd to December 21st. What seems common to you is not at all to others. And its rarity can attract attention, admiration, or envy. To avoid stirring up unwanted drama, keep your treasures hidden until the time is right. Capricorn, December 22nd to January 19th. You have a feeling things will go right. And the best part is, you're able to hold, at the very same time, a sense of gratitude, knowing that everything you count on in life is a gift. Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th. Share your appreciation in words and in the gestures that matter to others. It may mean taking the survey. So often the satisfied customers go silently on their way, and only the unhappy ones speak up. Your sharing will make a difference. Pisces, February 19th to March 20th. The paradox of love is, even though love lasts, its moments also rush by. Holding on to it is like grasping at water. The essence and beauty of water is flow. Today's birthday. You are the composer of your life, falling in love with your own opus. In the music of your daily life, secrets of your heart and mind will be unveiled, inviting discovery of new realms within. Your only job is to believe in your magic. More highlights. 5 new friends figure in. You'll be trusted in a key role and paid well for it. You'll master a hobby. Gemini and Libra adore you. Your lucky numbers are 8, 1, 19, 30, and 27.
To your good health. Jardian's prescription comes with many urinary issues. Dear Dr. Roach, I'm a 64-year-old male, and my A1C level has been averaging around 7.4% for a number of years. My doctor has been trying several combinations of drugs to get my A1C below 7%. I currently am maxed out on 25 milligrams of Jardiance, 2,000 milligrams of Metformin ER, and 14 milligrams of Rybelsus. However, I have many urinary issues associated with Jardiance and I'm quite miserable. With these 3 drugs, is there any way to tell which one is helping the most versus the least? If Jardiance is only helping 25% and the other two are helping 75%, then I would discontinue Jardiance and figure out another way to lower my A1C. Or I would only take Metformin and Rybelsus and see what happens with my next A1C. Signed, R. Answer. In any given person, it can be hard to predict which medicine will be the most effective, so the general rules I give might not correlate with your body. Metformin, which works by reducing the amount of sugar that the liver makes, is the usual first-line medication used for people with diabetes, and it's expected to lower the A1C level by 1 to 2 percentage points. You are on the maximum dose. Jardiance works by forcing your body to excrete glucose through the kidneys, so bladder infections are possible. Increased urination is also very common. It is expected to lower the A1C level by about 0.5 to 0.7 percentage points. However, it has been shown to reduce heart disease risk in people with known blockages in their hearts and also protects the kidneys in people with diabetic kidney disease. It helps with weight loss. Rybelsus also reduces heart disease risk and helps with weight loss. It can reduce the A1C by 0.5 to 2 percentage points, depending on the dose, whether it is given by mouth, Rybelsus, or injection, Ozempic. Based on the averages in the overall population with diabetes, Jardiance is likely to have the least effect on your A1C out of the 3. My guess would be that 85% of your benefit is coming from Rybelsus and Metformin. However, Jardiance could be helping your heart and kidneys more than expected based on the predicted A1C change. Dr. Keith Roach is a King Features advice columnist whose work appears Monday through Thursday and on Saturday. Write to Dr. Roach, 628 Virginia Drive, Orlando, Florida, 32803, or email toyourgoodhealth@med.cornell.edu.
Ask Amy. Lazy sun squanders chances. Dear Amy, I'm a 45-year-old woman, married to my wife for 5 years. My issue is my 21-year-old son, who lives with us. He's a good kid, but he's now unemployed for 4 months and spends his days playing video games. My son is very book smart, had a full ride to a prestigious university, but only stayed for a year and a half. He recently applied for the police academy, but he never really follows through with anything. He also dropped out of the fire academy because he was bored. He was working as a forklift operator while in school. He's always done very well in school, but he's lazy. I'm a nurse, and his dad is an over-the-road truck driver who just had another son with his younger wife. I'm always trying to get my ex-husband to motivate him. My wife and I have never lived alone our entire marriage, and she's getting frustrated. It's putting such a strain on me, as I feel like I have to choose my wife or my son. Honestly, I'm torn. And now they are starting to argue more with each other. Please help. Signed, Torn in Wisconsin. Dear Torn, your unemployed adult son living at home is not your issue. Overall, this is everyone's issue, but mainly it is his. And his main task right now should be to solve his own problem. Don't count on his father to motivate him. He is not living in his father's house. You and your wife should approach this as equal partners in your household. And you should present a united strategy for how to parent him into adulthood. The unemployment rate right now in Wisconsin is a very low 3%. Your son does not need another special opportunity put into his lap due to how smart he is. He squanders those opportunities because he knows he can. He needs to get a job at a fast food drive-through, a landscaping crew, the Walmart warehouse, or wherever he can get hired. Working a full day will give him a skill set, some money in his pocket, and self-esteem. I would cut the wireless at your house during the day, stop paying for his cell phone, and offer him only a roof over his head and nourishment until he can afford other housing. I know this is tough, but your marriage is on the line, and so is his future. Many parents have dealt with this issue by offering their adult children the option of working full-time or joining the military, which, given your son's interests, might actually be a very good fit. Ask Amy is a Tribune Media Services column by Amy Dickinson, appearing Monday through Thursday and on Saturday. Write to Ask Amy at P.O. Box 194, Freeville, New York, 13068, or email askamy@amydickinson.com.
Heloise, swapping green onions for leeks. Dear Heloise, I just graduated from college and I'm in my first apartment. I am teaching myself how to cook and have bought a couple of cookbooks. I've discovered that I really like leeks in a number of dishes. I was wondering if I can substitute green onions for leeks if the grocery store is out of leeks. Signed, Chad K., Wilmington, Illinois. Chad, well, yes, you can, but there will be a slight difference in the flavor of the dish you prepare. Leeks have a rather subtle flavor once they are cooked, and they are almost always cooked in various dishes. Green onions have a sharper taste and are sold in bunches, whereas leeks are usually sold one at a time due to their larger size. But please do try experimenting with various seasonings and develop your own dishes to suit your taste buds. Signed, Heloise. Dear readers, can you guess where pasta was originated? Was it A, Italy, B, Korea, C, China, or D, France? If you guess C, China, you are correct. According to historians, pasta's roots began in China during the Shang Dynasty. I believe that the people of this time made pasta either from wheat or rice flour. Signed, Heloise. Dear Heloise, when I make mashed potatoes, I usually make a rather large batch, so there are always leftovers. The next evening, I make the potatoes and roll them into balls by hand to about the size of an egg. Then I crack open three eggs, beat the eggs together, then roll the potato balls in beaten eggs and breadcrumbs. Next, I either deep fry them in oil or use my air fryer to fry the potato balls to a golden brown. Sometimes I like to chop up some carrots and onions very finely and mix these in the leftover potatoes to add a little extra flavor. Signed, Anne Marie, S. Tillamook, Oregon. Dear Heloise, maybe you can settle a disagreement between my sister and me. She claims using a wooden cutting board is dangerous because you can't sterilize it. She only uses plastic boards. Which is best? Signed, Connie T., Jackson, Mississippi. Connie, both wooden and plastic boards are safe to use if they're cared for properly. If a plastic board gets scratched, bacteria can and does enter the scratch. The same holds true of a wooden board. You can disinfect the plastic board by pouring hydrogen peroxide on it and letting it dry. Then wash it with a mild soap and warm water. A wooden cutting board should be washed with dish soap and warm water, and it should be dried immediately afterward. Never place a wooden cutting board in the dishwasher. However, a plastic board can be occasionally washed in the dishwasher if you have one. Signed, Heloise. Heloise is a King Features advice columnist whose work appears Monday through Saturdays. Send a hint to Heloise, heloise@heloise.com.
The Dish, Kimberly Dupps Truesdell for the Journal Gazette. Event offers taste of Central America, Mexico. After a hiatus of about 5 years, Mark Meyer is reviving his popular food tour, although the May event will look a little different. The World Says Eat Me was a dining tour that took participants to a variety of ethnic restaurants in the city. The tour provided people with an opportunity to try new foods or spots that they might otherwise be hesitant to explore. But the events went on hold during the 2020 and 2021 years because of the pandemic. Meyer says that after restrictions eased, he struggled to find the time needed to plan the 6-week series, which could attract between 40 to 70 people. While in France this winter, I noticed the Facebook page for The World Says Eat Me continued to get weekly hits, despite the fact events had not occurred in over 4 years, Meyer says. That seemed to confirm interest remained. Although I didn't want to take on the tour, I wondered if a single pop-up event would work. From 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. May 9th, there will be a World Says Eat Me event at Iglesia Bautista Emmanuel Church, 1327 Winter Street. Participants will be able to explore the food of Central America and Mexico. The tour made a stop with a welcoming congregation in 2018, Meyer says. The church has a diverse congregation, and members will work together in teams to prepare foods from their home country. To reserve a spot, go to eventbrite.com and search for The World Says Eat Me. Once at the event, participants can buy food tickets for $2 and choose to sample the dishes from select countries or all of them. Meyer says the planning of the event coincided with the congregation's need to build a new handicap entrance. Proceeds will help benefit the church. I am hoping to pick up where we left off and move forward with more pop-up events, Meyer says. There has been a wealth of restaurants of interest open up ever since the dismal days of COVID, and many ethnic organizations not yet tapped. Bringing people together at the dining table is always a good thing. Tiny Donuts. Nearly 2 years after plans were announced, Tiny Little Donuts has scheduled its grand opening. The Airstream trailer, parked near Kohl's at Chapel Ridge Shopping Center in the 10,500 block of Maysville Road, will begin serving up its donuts Saturday. The grand opening event will be from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. while supplies last. The mini donuts come in a variety of flavors, including cinnamon sugar, glazed, dark chocolate glazed, lemon glaze, and powdered sugar. They are served by the generous half dozen, which is 8, generous dozen, 15 to 16, or boxes of 100. Normal hours will be 7 a.m. to 1 p.m., Tuesday through Sunday. Food trucks return. Food truck season is back. Whether you want to try something new or grab your favorite sandwich from a kitchen on wheels, here are some local truck events. The Impact Center at 3420 East Paulding Road hosts food trucks beginning at 5:30 p.m. Mondays. The most recent event featured Chow Time, Goody's Trap House, and Head to Hawk, among other food trucks. Participants can also enjoy live music. Downtown Wabash Incorporated is collaborating with food truck vendors for a specially curated food truck plaza during Wabash First Friday events through October. The events will be at Veterans Plaza in downtown Wabash and feature 8 to 9 food trucks. During May First Friday, the plaza will include picnic tables donated by the Wabash Parks Department. Participating food trucks for the event will include Emmett's Paddy Wagon, Fairfax Coffee Company, Carol Sue's Barbecue, JB's Cuisine Machine, Payne's Fish and Chips, the Franklin Mobile Bar, Amore Colombian Food, Amazing AZN, and Nick's Dog Cart. Brunch with Mom. Looking for some Mother's Day brunch options? Here are a couple ideas for treating Mom this May. Chops at 6421 West Jefferson Boulevard is hosting a brunch buffet from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. May 12th. The buffet will feature prime rib, custom order omelets, biscuits, gravy, sliced ham, hash brown casserole, and fruit, among other dishes. The cost is $34.95 for adults and $12.95 for children ages 4 to 12. Call 436-9115 for reservations. Rune Restaurant at 2725 Broadway is taking reservations for 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. May 12th. The seasonal menu for the day includes chilaquiles made with a red sauce, braised pork shoulder, and sunny egg for $20. Bar manager Mae Strubel has created a Mother's Day cocktail named after her mother, Barbara. The rhubarbra, $5 on Mother's Day only, is made with rhubarb syrup, contrato aperitif, and cava. Go to runerestaurant.com for a link to make reservations. Timber Ridge Catering is hosting a special Mother's Day brunch from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Club 250 at 2330 East 250 North, Bluffton. The buffet will feature cheesy scrambled eggs, bacon, pastries, Cajun lemon pepper salmon, Parmesan crusted chicken, roasted red potatoes, salad, and assorted desserts. Tickets are $38.95 for adults and $13.95 for children ages 4 to 9. Ages 3 and younger are free. Every adult ticket includes a drink and truffles from DeBrand Fine Chocolates. Reserve a table now by texting or calling Don at 260-452-6066. The dish features restaurant news and food events and appears Wednesdays. Fax news items to 461-8893. Email kdups at jg.net or call 461-8304 at least 2 weeks before event or desired publication.
Tangy goat cheese, meaty mushrooms, mix in salad. Christopher Kimball, Christopher Kimball's Milk Street. A good salad strikes a perfect balance of textures and flavors, but it's easy to overdo it with rich ingredients, especially when adding savory elements. For a vegetarian salad that hits the right notes, mix tangy cheese with meaty mushrooms and bitter greens. In this recipe from our book, Tuesday Night's Mediterranean, which features weeknight-friendly meals from the region, we combine roasted portobello mushrooms with fresh goat cheese, toasted walnuts, and a combination of bitter radicchio and frisée, adding sweetness and a honeyed red wine vinaigrette. To begin, we coat sliced mushrooms with olive oil seasoned with garlic, thyme, salt, and pepper to highlight their savory character, then roast until moisture they release evaporates and the slices begin to brown. The greens and cheese can be prepared during the 10 minutes the mushrooms are in the oven and the vinaigrette is made as they cool. We like the texture and color of frisée and radicchio, but if you prefer leafier greens, use watercress or arugula, which tend to be peppery instead of bitter. To make the salad more filling, serve with sliced baguette and garnish individual portions with a poached egg. There is a recipe for frisée mushroom salad with goat cheese and walnuts. If you would like that recipe, you may call the station at 421-1376.
Carrots transform fruity dessert into savory meal. Gretchen McKay, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Here's how it often goes at dinner time on weeknights in my kitchen. My husband walks in, and if there's no discernible aroma wafting across the room, he starts lifting lids on pans on the stovetop and looking in the fridge for leftovers before wondering out loud, "What's for dinner?" On a recent day, the answer was something of a shocker, given his lifetime belief that every nighttime meal should include a starch, a vegetable, and some sort of animal protein. In addition to a tender green salad dressed in a tangy cheesy vinaigrette, there was an entree featuring the hardest working veggie in my refrigerator's crisper drawer, carrots. If you're going to go vegetarian, this is the way to go. Deb Perlman of Smitten Kitchen's vegetal take on the classic fruit-topped French dessert tarte tatin is nothing short of spectacular. Carrots sautéed in butter with a little honey are always delicious, but when you also add a splash of balsamic vinegar, toss in a little goat cheese, and tuck them into a tight circle on top of puff pastry, well, there's something else entirely. Perlman categorizes the dish as an appetizer, and indeed, cut into thin wedges, the tarte tatin would make a lovely finger food for parties. But paired with a salad and a crusty roll, it becomes an even lovelier veggie-forward casual supper. The dish is best served warm. If you make it in advance, keep it in the pan and gently warm it in the oven before flipping it onto a plate. To get the full recipe for the carrot tarte tatin with salad greens, please call the station at 421-1376.
We will now read editorials for Wednesday, April 24th. The opinions expressed are those of the writer and not necessarily the opinions of the Audio Reading Service, the Allen County Public Library, Northeast Indiana Public Radio, PBS Fort Wayne, or your readers Michelle or
Sarah.
Letters to the editor. Banks Veterans Outreach knows no boundaries. 9.5 years ago, I became a resident at the Shepherd's House. I got the chance to change my life and meet some really great people. Most notably and fun to talk to was Congressman Jim Banks. About 6 years ago, when Shepherd's House lost Veterans Administration funding, even though Shepherd's House has always exceeded every hurdle designed by the VA, Banks took on the mission and contacted the VA secretary. Within 8 days, he turned around Shepherd House's funding. He's a small-town Indiana boy, a Christian, and a Navy veteran. Like me, he served in a combat environment. He got us because he is one of us. That's why Banks lives his life to serve other veterans who may have lost hope. I've seen him work one-on-one with veterans concerning issues with their service connection, those who have lost their military discharge papers, and personally deliver American flags for our veterans who've lost their fight with cancer or heart issues. He also helped me, an Indiana combat veteran of the Marine Corps, with 2 tours in Iraq. I am grateful for Congressman Banks. That was submitted by Brandon Krantz of Garrett. A daughter's viewpoint on DeKalb council race. I think my dad, Bob Kraft, should be reelected to the DeKalb County Council. My dad has always been a very driven and hardworking person. I grew up watching my dad mentor teens at Youth for Christ and try and engage with the young adults in our community. I have had some heartfelt conversations with the now adults from that program who were positively impacted by him. My dad instilled in me at a young age the importance of community outreach and helping those in need. He shaped me to be the person that I am today, and I could not be more thankful to have his guidance in my life. My dad has been volunteering for various organizations in our community for several years. He cares a great deal about everyone in our community and is passionate about making everyone feel welcome. My dad truly cares to listen to what all the citizens in our county want and reflects that in his decision-making. There are a lot of great candidates running this year for the county council, and I think my dad's knowledge and experience can help guide our county to continue to being successful. This was submitted by Tiana Caldwell of Auburn. Touching tribute. Kudos to Greg Bender on his thoughtful artwork depicting the late Mayor Tom Hendry and wife Cindy. A beautiful tribute. Well done. Submitted by Denise Watkins of Pierston. King's contributions don't merit tribute. I don't understand why they want to name a street after Martin Luther King. He didn't do anything for this city that I can see. I don't understand why everyone thinks he was a great person. He had some ideas, but for the most part, he caused hate and discontent everywhere he went. Riots, burning, looting, etc. Nancy S. Rogers' April 13 letter brought up a very important point, putting the name of Calhoun Street on a ballot and letting the whole city vote. I'm surprised, as she mentioned, that renaming other streets hasn't been mentioned, Jefferson, Lafayette, etc. This was submitted by Robert Hart of Fort Wayne.
Opinion. Forfeiture of freedom. Jail construction symbolizes move toward authoritarianism. Justin Bender. It is with deep sympathy that I reach out to my brothers and sisters in Allen County, as we are made to shoulder this heavy burden. The powers that be have spoken. Allen County must build a new $350 million, 1,300-bed detention facility, whether we want it or not. It is to be funded by an increase in local income tax because if property tax is used, a statute requires that the project be put into a ballot referendum. In all likelihood, the citizens would have voted against it. This plan provides no procedural or structural changes to ensure humane and constitutional treatment of inmates. It only temporarily relieves overcrowding, and it won't even do that until it is built. We see the standing army prohibited by the U.S. Constitution being built up all around us. Why do they think it will be necessary to detain 1,100, 1,300, 3,000 plus of us? Our population is only expected to grow 30%. Why is the jail growing 90%? Do we expect a greater percentage of our community to be in poverty, the cause of crime? Do we plan to conduct 50 more years of the war on drugs, expecting different results from the last 50? This jail will be a police operating base used to control our own population by overwhelming force. That's why the cost per bed is 40% higher than comparable jails in other counties. It includes police operating facilities. The Cop City Urban Warfare Training Complex, being fought so hard by the people of Atlanta, only costs $100 million. Many of us saw this juncture as an opportunity to enact the change being called for all over the United States, to stop expanding mass incarceration, to stop declaring war on people who use drugs. We don't want to be the country with the highest percentage of incarcerated people in the whole world anymore. Can we at least set a goal for reducing our incarceration levels to those of Russia, China, or Iran? These models of democratic freedom only incarcerate half as much of their population as we do. More than half of our inmates are nonviolent offenders. Maybe there are other ways they could repay society besides sitting in one of our multi-million dollar cages. It's time to get creative, to envision a brighter future, to look at crime management strategies around the world, and adopt what works because our approach clearly does not. There are a few powerful contractors who invested with campaign contributions to the Allen County Commissioners that will be pocketing a good chunk of that $350 million. But every dime it makes for its few beneficiaries will cost the rest of us a dollar, thanks to the employees, renters, taxpayers, local business customers, and family members it removes from our community. Not to mention our forfeiture of freedom to this growing and unaccountable police state. We've seen other countries build massive police forces and detention centers in their move to authoritarianism, but never to such a gigantic extent as here in modern America. We, as citizens, cannot in good conscience participate in this building's construction. Whatever our role as professionals may be, we must refuse service for the building of this facility. If we accept money to build a warehouse for our neighbors and grandchildren that is a predatory scourge on our community, we are no better than the county commissioners who accepted campaign donations from the developer. Justin Bender of Ossian is a construction operator foreman.
Editorial. Law and orders. State moves swiftly to address attorney shortage. During an interim study committee last fall, Indiana's legal community raised alarms that a statewide attorney shortage was leaving Hoosiers unrepresented. Friday, State Supreme Court Chief Justice Loretta Rush called the deficit critical and announced a commission to examine the issue and recommend ways to increase the number of lawyers. Virtually all 92 Hoosier counties have fewer lawyers per capita than the national average, and the gap is especially acute in Indiana's rural and most socioeconomically disadvantaged communities, as well as in the public service sector, Rush said in Friday's order. This shortage threatens the institution of the legal profession, public trust in the courts, the rule of law, and the civic health of our communities. Indiana has 15,802 practicing lawyers, according to the American Bar Association. Justice Faulkner, Chief Administrative Officer for the State Supreme Court, told the Interim Study Committee on Corrections and Criminal Code in October the state has about 2.3 lawyers per 1,000 residents, fewer than the national average of 4 lawyers per 1,000. That puts the state in the bottom 10 nationally for available legal counsel. While the attorney shortage is a national problem, its effects are felt most in rural areas. The Bar Association considers any county with less than one lawyer per 1,000 people a legal desert. In Indiana last year, 45 of the state's 92 counties fit that definition, including Northeast Indiana's Huntington, LaGrange, Noble, Wells, and Whitley counties. The average Indiana attorney in a metropolitan area has been admitted to the bar and practiced law for 24 years, the Corrections Study Committee was told. That increases to 25.7 years of experience in rural counties. Indiana Supreme Court data further shows more than half of the state's lawyers are clustered within Marion and other central Indiana urban counties. And these attorneys are younger than their rural counterparts, with fewer than a third of Marion County lawyers of retirement age. Looking at that retirement window opening, that's where we really start to worry. When folks hit 29 years past admission to the bar, even though lawyers can practice well past that, Faulkner told the committee, we're just not seeing the young lawyers backfilling the older lawyers as they retire out of rural communities. And that causes a number of workforce problems. Rush's Commission on Indiana's Legal Future will explore options to increase the number of attorneys in the state and present recommendations to the court. Members, including Fort Wayne attorney Angela Jones, will be divided into 5 groups. Those on the business and licensure models group will identify ways in which the current law firm business model and professional regulations can be improved and make recommendations on alternative legal licensure models. Pathways to admission and education members will find models for alternative avenues to legal practice and streamline connections among secondary, undergraduate, and law school institutions. Incentivizing rural practice group participants will recommend ways to connect law students and other legal professionals to opportunities within rural communities. Incentivizing public service members will identify ways to promote interest in public service-oriented legal work, including criminal justice, family services, legal aid, and in local and state government. Members of the Technology Applications Group will attempt to find safe and ethical emerging technologies, perhaps generative artificial intelligence, to fill gaps in legal representation. Commission members are on a tight timetable. A final report to the state Supreme Court is due by July. If legislative changes or funding requests are proposed, the commission must provide those recommendations by August 1st. Kudos to the Indiana Supreme Court for using its exclusive constitutional authority to address the challenge of increasing the number of practicing attorneys within the state. Not having enough available attorneys causes wait lists for representation on criminal cases and civil suits, work on wills, trust, divorce, child custody, increases lawyers' caseloads, and by extension, lowers the efficacy of the state criminal justice system.
Fallout from gerrymanders more insidious on closer look. Michael Leppert. Gerrymandering is more than math. I have had this conversation many times over the years with a variety of people, and I have been surprised by their surprise almost every time. Whichever party is drawing the maps, they draw them to benefit themselves. That part is very basic math. In Indiana, Republicans in the State House have served themselves up a lovely matrix of sweetheart deals. Last week, James Briggs of the Indianapolis Star wrote a column about Senator Dave Nizgotsky, a Democrat from South Bend, who had been accused of sexually harassing a former employee in 2017. The premise is that Democrats maintained a breathtaking lack of curiosity about the accusations. While I primarily agree, I contend the situation is lacking in systemic ways, too. Personally, I'm not curious about the accusations. I believe them entirely. But what is the remedy? In a word, elections. There hasn't been a long line of candidates pining for the chance to replace Nizgotsky, or any line at all. Why would any Democrat want his job? Who wants a career of certain defeat on every ideological issue? Gerrymandering in Indiana has created lopsided representation in the State House. We talk about the math all the time, without talking deeply enough about the math's impact. There are 40 Democratic members of the 150 in the Indiana General Assembly. All should be applauded for serving at all. It takes unusual patience and tolerance to endure life in what is supposed to be a deliberative body, but is now overpopulated with a supermajority of unpersuadable people. It also takes an unusual amount of talent to deliver positive results for one's constituency. The job, as it currently exists, is profoundly unattractive. It leads to a reluctance to run, just like it leads to a reluctance to vote. Current district boundaries result in some obvious and ludicrous results on the side of the supermajority. The matrix in place assures that many elected officials ascend by successfully pandering only to the most extreme voters within the GOP. This drives down deliberative quality, though that is incidental. The goal is control, and that mission has been solidly accomplished. A victorious candidate on the Republican side is immediately able to move and pass legislation. It doesn't take an elevated persuasive skill or some innovative idea. That benefit just comes with the job. In most cases, all they have to do is win in the primary. Indiana is not 80% Republican, but the Indiana Senate is. Indiana is also not 70% Republican, but the Indiana House is. Even the congressional districts have been drawn to be safely Republican is 7 out of 9, or 77%. In 2020, Donald Trump won Indiana over Joe Biden, 58% to 41%. That is a pretty typical partisan split over the past half century. If that split exists in the State House, the number and quality of candidates seeking office would skyrocket. So would voter engagement. And the cycle would simply make Indiana a better place. A Republican presidential candidate has only crossed the 60% threshold twice in my lifetime. Ronald Reagan in 1984, and Richard Nixon in 1972. Nizgotsky has an opponent in the May primary. Tim Swager is the St. Joseph County treasurer and has given the incumbent a challenge. Congratulations to him for entering this inviting arena. And this is one outcome I am certainly curious to see. Michael Leppert is an author, educator, and a communication consultant in Indianapolis. A version of this column appeared in the Indiana Capital Chronicle.
We will now read primetime TV listings for Wednesday, April 24th. CBS, 8 p.m., Survivor. 9:30, The Amazing Race. ABC, 8 p.m., The Conners. 8:30, Not Dead Yet. 9:30, The $100,000 Pyramid. 10 p.m., The $100,000 Pyramid. NBC, 8 p.m., Chicago Med. 9 p.m., Chicago Fire. 10 p.m., Chicago PD. PBS, 8 p.m., Changing Planet. 9 p.m., A Brief History of the Future. 10 p.m., Nova. Fox, 8 p.m., The Masked Singer, 9 p.m., Animal, 9:30, Family Guy, 10 p.m., Fox 55 News. We're now going to read a few local sports highlights next, but if you love sports, tune in Mondays at 1:30 and 10:30 p.m. and Tuesday at 6 a.m. for Spotlight on Sports with stories from Sports Illustrated magazine. Or tune in every Sunday afternoon at 4:30 p.m. and Monday mornings at 6 a.m. and listen to a full hour of the last week's local, regional, and national sports stories during Sports in Review. And now we'll read a few highlights from several local sports stories for you, starting with
Sports Priest Staff News Services. Tin Caps get rained out. Doubleheader set today. The first game of the Tin Caps six-game series with the Great Lakes Loons was rained out Tuesday, setting up a doubleheader today at Parkview Field. Game 1 will get underway at 5:35 p.m., with gates opening at 5:05 p.m. Game 2 of the Twin Bill will start half an hour after the end of the first game. Both games will be 7 innings. Tickets for tonight's game will be good for both games. Those with tickets for Tuesday's game can exchange them for tickets of equal or lesser value to any home game the rest of the season. To exchange tickets, go to the Parkview Field ticket office or call 260-482-6400. Jagger Haynes, the number 24 prospect in the San Diego farm system, will start for Fort Wayne in Game 1 tonight, while Tuesday's expected starter, Emmanuel Pinales, will start Game 2. Auto Racing. Indy Fan Fest to be at Electric Works. An Indy 500 Fan Fest will be held at Electric Works at 1690 Broadway from 5 to 8 p.m. Thursday. The festival will include an Indy 500 show car, the BorgWarner Trophy, IMS President Doug Bowles, interactive displays, music, and giveaways. Basketball. Turnstone calls for volunteers. The Turnstone Center for Children and Adults with Disabilities is seeking volunteers for Friday through Sunday for the National Wheelchair Basketball Association Women's and Military Division National Championships at the Plasman Athletic Center. To volunteer, sign up at turnstone.org or call 260-483-2100. Guard to remain with Irish women. Notre Dame guard K.K. Bransford, a former McDonald's All-American and an Atlantic Coast Conference All-Freshman team selection in 2023, will withdraw from the transfer portal and return to the Irish, Coach Neely Ivey announced. 76ers Maxey Most Improved. Philadelphia 76ers guard Tyrese Maxey was named the most improved player in the NBA after averaging a career-best 25.9 points and 6.2 assists. High schools. Kokomo star wins Mr. Basketball. Kokomo senior Flory Badunga was named the 2024 Mr. Basketball winner Tuesday, becoming the third Wildcat to earn the state's top boys basketball award. The Kansas recruit averaged 19 points, 12.9 rebounds, and 4.4 block shots. Jack Benter of Brownstown Central finished second in the voting. Hockey. Two teams OKs. The Comets are owed future considerations by two ECHL teams, the Florida Everblades and the Allen Americans, the teams confirmed. The Everblades owed for the March 21st trade of Matthew Wedman that brought Zach Andrusiak and Stanislav Demin to Fort Wayne. The Americans owe for the trade of William Provost and Joe Gattenby, which brought Fort Wayne Chad Butcher on November 20th. Track and field. PFW athletes win Horizon Honors. Purdue Fort Wayne's Jay Reed was named the Horizon League's Women's Runner of the Week, and Aaron Martin was named Men's Field Athlete of the Week. Reed set a school record in the 100 meters Saturday, with a time of 11.61 at Indiana State's Gibson Invitational to finish second. Martin shattered the javelin program record with a throw of 66.03 meters for first place in Terre Haute.
NBA playoffs. Siakam leads way as Pacers tie it up. Final was Indiana 125, Milwaukee 108. Scores 37 points as Indiana snaps playoff loss streak. Steve McGargy for the Associated Press. Dateline Milwaukee. Pascal Siakam scored 37 points, and the Indiana Pacers overcame another fantastic first-half performance from Damian Lillard to beat the Milwaukee Bucks 125-108 on Tuesday night and tie their Eastern Conference first-round playoff series at a game each. Indiana snapped a 10-game playoff losing streak that began with a Game 7 loss to Cleveland in a first-round series in 2018. The Pacers were swept by Boston in 2019 and by Miami in 2020. Two nights after scoring all 35 of his points in the first half of the Bucks' 109-94 game, one victory, Lillard had 26 by halftime Tuesday and finished with 34. It wasn't enough. Lillard didn't get enough help with the Bucks, once again missing two-time MVP Giannis Antetokounmpo due to a strained left calf. He hasn't played since he was hurt in an April 9 victory over the Boston Celtics. He shot today, was on the floor a bunch, Bucks coach Doc Rivers said during his pregame media session. He's getting closer. The series heads to Indianapolis for Game 3 on Friday. This concludes the reading of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. This morning's reading of the journal will repeat later today at 6 p.m. Today, Wednesday, April 24th, we are sending birthday greetings to listener Joy C. from Winona Lake. If today is your birthday, we wish you a very happy one. Your readers today have been Michelle with
Sarah.
We invite you to stay tuned for the next program.